There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Mark Rogers. I'm hosting the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 703, May 9th, 2016. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Tim the Pig and Revlon Cosmetics. They called it back to around.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Nico, unstoppable. McLaren in the points. How far can Verstappen go now? And of course, I told you so. Caveat is a madman. F1 Weekly now available on WROCK radio, streaming on WLOR.net Wednesday at 11 p.m. and Saturday at 3 p.m. And please stay tuned for Motorsports Mondial with the King. And we've got 50 words from the F1 Weekly Forum on the Putin Grand Prix. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. And what a shocker we had. The torpedo has been torpedoed.
So exciting. So fun. But I said it on the last podcast. Vettel was going to be furious in Russia. And sure enough, Putin, caveat, you can't trust them, son of a bitches.
Whoa. Have you joined what campaign have you joined? Bush?
No, Jeb Bush is out. Trump is in.
Okay, maybe we need to build a wall around Sochi also.
Exactly.
Now.
But no, I mean, what? Well, I know we need to talk about qualifying, but boy, was that an exciting start. Caveat was just on fire.
Yeah. But I got to tell you something, man. Got up one morning and I'm looking first thing Autosport as I always do, and it says Red Bull replaces Kvyat with Max Verstappen, and I said, well, that was not a surprise, but what a surprise was that they demoted him instead of giving him Das Boot.
Yes, that was a surprise, but really, I found out about it on the forum, where a president of European operations posted some strange F1 website link to this happening, and sure enough, it was true. The boys on the forum know what's going down.
Well, we have our clientele is very educated.
But no, absolutely unbelievable. It was exciting. I loved every minute of it, and especially when Q3 came around and Hamilton had a problem.
Yeah, you know, it's like they're saying that if he had no bad luck, I mean, he will have no luck. And it's just amazing, you know, that that in Sochi his water breaks. And 2014, as we have said before, in a very long season like this year, it is better to have issues early in the season. Late season kablamos and done blow up put too much pressure in the remaining races, and one irrational exuberance can cost you the championship. And I hate to give you this example, Mr. Rogers, but your Dios mio, Senor Alonso, found this out the hard way on a rainy night at Mount Fujiyama circuit. And his buddy and teammate, Lewis, found out on a rainy night in Shanghai, where he left his championship footprint in the pebbles just before the pits. And of course, we are talking about our favorite cage rattling season of 2017. So when will his luck change? You tell me, sir.
The beautiful thing, everybody's happy, and Fernando's happy.
Fernando, I think, was very happy. And, you know, I was hoping to see his one-time Russian Dushka back in Sochi, but I guess he has moved on to bigger and, you know, better pastures.
True. More sensible pastures. And anyway, I think she's dating Putin.
She's dating Putin. Yes. That's good.
I was happy to see... a 5-spot grid penalty for changing a gearbox, but he would have been on the front row. An outstanding job by Ferrari, and also Valtteri Bottas and Felipe Massa still doing a good job, and this time they beat the Red Bulls. I thought that was great. And Sergio Perez really coming out of the closet this season finally, and because, you know, he hasn't scored any points yet. We all thought the Force India with the Mercedes package would be more competitive than it's shown, but this weekend finally Sergio. Very exciting, and boy, whew, man, loving it.
Is the host sleepy tonight?
Very sleepy, you know. It is what it is. You know, yeah. I have to do the landscaping around the Palatial Studios since the budget's been cut.
Oh, wow. And I have to say that it was good to see the, you know, Bottas on the front row. This is the first time since 2014 that he was on the front row. And of course, you know what is impressive, that Rosberg, when he took that pole position, he was more than half a second faster than our favorite Vettel. And as Nico said, his car felt like it was on rails. So you can imagine how impressive that car and package, the overall thing they have given to Nico and Lewis this year. It's just very impressive. And talking of, you mentioned Señor Perez. You know, he has basically become the machismo of Force India over Mr. Nico Hülkenberg. Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that. I don't know. Perez is hungry, and Nico Hülkenberg seems to be full and, you know, unbuttoning his pants and relaxing.
Oh, wow. That's pretty interesting. But you have to say a poutine prayer for Nico Hülkenberg for the second year in a row. He was out of the Russian Grand Prix. I just have this feeling that he's been there for quite a few years now, Nico Hülkenberg, and looks like he's losing the plot, you know, perhaps winning Le Mans at his first and only attempt has opened his eyes. There is life after Formula One. This is from a kid who won the Formula BMW in his first attempt, while Sebastian Vettel took two attempts. And I just think that the best opportunities have passed him by, and it's pretty much the same thing with Romain Grosjean.
I agree. Well, I accept that Romain Grosjean is hungry and doing a good job over at Haas.
Well, pretty soon he'll be having a lunch and dinner at Golden Corral, some website today, that Haas is going to put him in some NASCAR races. And I'll tell you something, if they put him with decent testing in Watkins Glen and Sears Point, I won't be surprised if he wins a race on a road course.
Well, and free hot dogs.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, who will be putting them on the grill? Tony Stewart.
Danica.
And his nickname is Smoke, so it'll go
yeah,
very well.
Yeah, beautiful, Nasser. Keep up the good work.
What else did you like in quali, sir?
You know, everything was normal in quali. I enjoyed it. I was very happy that Jenson Button now qualified Fernando.
Okay.
Pretty shocking.
That always comes up. I have to say, you know, enjoying this course, because you can eat in the morning.
Really?
Yeah, that's very nice.
So. I thought that the Renaults did poorly again, Kevin Magnussen in 17th. And, of course, the suffering of the south front of us, very sad, but it is what it is with Marcus Ericsson qualifying 22nd.
Yeah, you know, I think they just have to wear the season out and then, you know, focus on designing and developing the 2017. But this combo is going to catch fire sooner or later. And, Honda is showing some life now. And they have a new man at the top for their motorsports Formula One program. So I think there will be some serious competition for Mercedes, if not this season, hopefully by the second half of next season.
Yes, I agree. And with Jenson Button qualifying in 12th, Fernando in 14th, both making it into Q2, they are showing a lot of machismo-ness. So I was very, very happy for Fernando. And, next year could be their season. Honda has been saving tokens, and they're ready to spend tokens on a big, huge upgrade coming up for the European window of opportunity. So, it's going to be very interesting how McLaren pushes through the field and how Mercedes will respond as Ferrari and Renault, that is Tag Heuer, Renault-powered Red Bull, starts pushing as we get into Europe. It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, if it pans out this way, then I think your man Alonso should show appreciation for Honda's effort at one of the races, especially at Silverstone, which is very quick track. He can get on the radio and say, IndyCar engine.
Keep up the good work, NASCAR. You never forgive, do you, Nas? Never forgive.
Well, you know, motor racing is a tough business. And you know what is interesting? I was reading a comment from, there are two ex-Formula One drivers who always have a comment for anything and are willing to share it if anybody is listening. One is Jacques Villeneuve, the other is Mark Webber. But Mark Webber's comment was caught my attention. He said in Formula One, there is nowhere to hide. And that's exactly what Derek Daly said to me when we interviewed him. So, nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. And I was actually looking at Kvyat, not to bank too much on him. How he got, I mean, we followed his career from Formula BMW. If you look at his year-by-year progress, somebody, he is very lucky. They hung on to him. He only delivered one championship with three wins in GP3. And they've easily thrown him out, you know, that they are giving him one. I would be shocked if they retain. I don't think he'll be retained for next season at Toro Rosso.
I think
what
he's
do you
gone.
Think?
The other Russian guy that ruined Fernando's championship.
Yes. But they have this guy, Sergei Sirotkin, whose papa was going to buy a Sauber some years ago. But as usual, the rubles were not deposited in a Swiss bank account in time. He's a pretty wild guy, but he's very quick, like Sato. And I won't be surprised if Sergei Sirotkin is the first Russian to win the GP2. Kapitos,
yes,
as we call it.
Yes. But no, and I'm telling you, the weird, for me, what was really weird about the Russian Grand Prix is that whole entourage of Putin's. And why was Bernie hanging around?
Well, you know, I know a lot of people don't like Putin, and, you know, we don't want to bring politics into this thing. But I'll tell you something. From a popularity of a sport, if the president of the country shows up, a lot of eyeballs. I mean, just look at realistically, regardless of who is president of the United States, if they show up at a Formula One race, you can imagine it would be on every network, you know.
Absolutely.
Just,
no. Interesting, that all the thugs that Putin is surrounded with, all those black suits, and there's little Bernie in his baseball jacket.
Yeah, but it's secret, sort of like a, you know, secret entourage that travels, and it's pretty much the same with all the heads of state or important people, you know. They may be dressed in a different suit or some in civilian clothing, but the popularity of the sport, it's very good in Russia that
okay.
He is there.
Well, I'm sure.
I mean, just look at it this way, Clark. It's very simple for me. 2 months before the United States Grand Prix, if they do TV commercials on major networks, free-to-air network, as they call it, with Michael Jordan promoting the U.S. Grand Prix, everybody in this country will know there is a Formula One race in Austin, Texas. They may call it Grand Prix, but they will at least know it's happening.
That's true. So let's hope that...
And let me just tell you, this is an actual experience I had with some of my buddies. U.S. Grand Prix Indianapolis was sitting at Bob Evans, a mighty fine place to have breakfast. And one of the guys in the group said to the lady, "We're here for the Formula One Grand Prix." And her response was, "Well, I thought Indy 500 was in May."
I like her.
Oh, yeah.
She got a good tip.
Yeah, and like my friend says to this day, we were like not even more than 3 miles. We were very close to the brickyard. But, you know, these things happen.
Keep up the good work, and let's hope that Fernando wins in Spain so I can be happy again.
Yes, that will be nice.
But
it will be interesting to see how this McLaren-Honda package will do if there's a serious rain race.
Yes. There could be no rain, though. Not in España.
Well, do you remember when Michael's first victory in Ferrari was heavy rain?
In the rain.
Yeah, I haven't seen rain in Spain in quite a while, though, I have to say.
Exactly.
It's very rare to see rain at Monza.
Correct. So let's wrap up qualifying. Nico Rosberg got pole, of course. Sebastian Vettel, who should have been on the front row, but because of our stupid penalties, had to go back to 7th. But and Lewis Hamilton starting in 10th. You know, he always gets in trouble when he's in 10th.
Well, we'll talk about once you talk about the cars coming up to second corner. And that was real surprise for me.
The second corner is a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, if there's any, let's play physical. You know Lewis is going to be involved if he's not starting from the front row. And this time I said, you know, this guy is gone and this is, Nico Rosberg is pretty going to come out with a 60-point mark. Lewis was running after the going into corner number 3.
Very true. let's talk about that great start. A fantastic start by Nico Rosberg, but even better start from Kimi Raikkonen getting by Valtteri Bottas, showing that fortunately, if Vettel had started from the front row, it would have been a different story, but he didn't. Started in seventh, flanking Daniel Ricciardo, Kvyat in the back, and boy, did I predict this right. Kvyat, so excited to be on the podium on the last Grand Prix, and this time with Putin and his people cheering him on, he decided to play bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, you know, there are two sides to every story. I read on some website, racing website, that first hit was his fault, no problem. But the second hit, apparently, Sebastian had slowed down a little bit because he felt there was a problem with the car. But, you know, if you're driving behind, you're in a Formula One race, there are no excuses. So Kvyat is now paying a very heavy penalty for his irrational exuberance, as we said earlier.
Absolutely. I mean, to hit him twice, and of course a second hit spun Sebastian Vettel, and he went into the wall, ending his race, which is bad because that means no points. Luckily, Kimi Raikkonen did an outstanding Grand Prix.
Marco and Horner are not going to cry any crocodile tears if he goes out at Sebastian Vettel. But I think what really pissed them off that Kvyat actually got Daniel Ricciardo in the mix also.
Exactly. That was my whole point, that Vettel had to hit Ricciardo. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Punctures. And, of course, we get the virtual safety car first and the real safety car second. But still, very, very exciting. And you're right. Lewis Hamilton came out of this unscathed. And it was very impressive how he stayed in the top. Not only that, but I thought Romain Grosjean from 15th, I think, to 8th was outstanding.
Yeah.
And, of course, Fernando El Machismo.
Oh, yeah, always.
Yeah, so it was a very exciting Grand Prix, and that first lap was a dinger. But, on the other hand, Nico Rosberg is on a roll. And being on pole with a fast car that starts well keeps you out of trouble. And booyah! His luck is called 2016 season.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just incredible, you know. I mean, Lewis had a very, very, in the opening lap shenanigans. And had he dropped and Nico had, you know, taken the lead to 6 points or something like for LCH to overcome. But, you know, the real interesting thing is now, with such a decent, comfortable lead, but with so many races to go, there is still a lot of points to be taken. And he's now leading, I believe, by 43 points.
Correct.
Right? And in this day and age of 25 points per win, that is not even a two-win margin. So it will be like having when they used to give 9 points, having like a 15, 16-point lead. You know, with 30% of the races done. So it's not a done deal. 17 races remaining, including the Spanish F1 Fiesta coming this weekend. And that adds up to a lot of points, 425 points. But here is this interesting thing brought up again and again during the telecast. In 1991, Senna won the first four races of the season. Then Arnaiz did the same thing the following season. And Michael Schumacher did this twice. And it's interesting how he did it. In 1994, that was his first championship with Benetton. And the second time he did was in 2004, which was the last of his 7 championships on board a Ferrari. And would you like to remind everybody who stopped his reign of non-stop victories and championships?
Yes, El Machismo Hombre de España de Oviedo, El Macho Fernando Alonso.
Great, gracias, señor. But Nico is a smart cookie. He knows that racing seasons are like the fine print in mutual fund prospectus. You know, it says past performance is no guarantee of future results. And his stock may be at a 52-week high, but his teammate, the very talented, what you call SA bro, may turn out to be Nico's Lehman Brothers and bring about a market crash. And last I checked, the Bank of Bernie does not provide bailouts. What say you?
Well, that's very, very true. And Nico has admitted it, that there's no safety zones in this season, that anything could happen. And Lewis Hamilton certainly can start winning Grand Prix, and Nico may get a DNF here and there.
Yeah, is that what goes around comes around. Can you imagine, Clark, just for a second, I'm not saying it should happen this way, but let's just say Lewis Hamilton is world champion at the end of the season with like 10 wins or 9 wins. I mean, what will that do to Nico Rosberg and Papa Keke Rosberg?
It would be like getting a vasectomy.
Oh, my goodness. That's more than what I was thinking.
No, but that's not going to happen. Nico is on a high. He is psychologically strong. And I'm telling you right now, Lewis Hamilton, something may happen also in Spain. And this could continue. We never know what's going on. And, of course, there's a conspiracy at the Mercedes fan base where they think they're doing it on purpose. So, all bets are off.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know. I remember there was a comment somebody made some years ago. It did not involve LCH and Nico, but it may have been somehow made it to the podium. You know, the commentator said, you know, what will it take instead of this? I see him on the podium. And that probably is what's going through Nico's mind right now.
Not only
that,
but if Lewis Hamilton has more problems than the next couple of races, including Monaco, then I suspect that he will begin to get text messages from Fisichella. Bravo, bravo, bravo.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. But let's see what happens. And it doesn't take much for things to turn around, you know. I mean, if Lewis goes 4 or 5 wins in a row, and Nico has some issue, I think what could be a real spoiler for both of them, or one of them, is Sebastian Vettel. But looks like, you know, instead of catching up to McLaren, they're splitting a little bit, not a whole lot.
But don't forget, Renault's coming out with an updated engine package. So is McLaren. And if Renault's coming out with a package that's updated, that means Tag Heuer Renault is coming out with an updated package. Very exciting stuff, especially when we get to Monaco, where with these updates, it may not be a Mercedes on pole.
Well, that's very true, and whoever gets on pole is going to pretty much win that Grand Prix, 2 hours of round-the-house races. But, you know, I don't think that the Renault package or the Honda package is going to... I mean, they need to come up with more than half a second just to catch up to Mercedes.
I understand. But my point is, the Renault upgrades could help Red Bull up closer to Mercedes.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's exciting, but really, it's some of my favorite parts of Sochi was the battle between Renault, Magnussen and the Renault, Romain Grosjean, Carlos Sainz Jr., that mid-pack field. I mean, I was impressed on how Magnussen was able to hold them off and stay ahead of them to stay in the points.
Yeah, K-Mag is getting quite a kudos for that. And last few races, we've seen a lot of good dicing and good, not like they're showing. Sometimes they show 2 cars running by themselves for lap after lap. You know?
Well, they used to do that a lot. But right now, we saw very little of Nico Rosberg in this Grand Prix.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, who's going to get high with a car running by itself? As impressive as
it
is.
It's boring. But there were some good battles in this Grand Prix that I enjoyed. And I thought Renault, compared to the qualifying, looked a lot better in race pace.
Yes, and it's a good-looking car, I have to say.
Well, of course. Yellow and black is always good-looking. It's Renault colors. I'm very happy. And Fernando doing out pit stops. McLaren is coming back. It takes time. It takes baby steps.
Yeah, it's going to take time. There's no question about
it. And we'll see what happens at Mercedes, because the infighting in the back room is what's going to be a problem at Mercedes, with Nico now on top, Lewis Hamilton struggling. There's a lot, so much psychological pressure we'll see what happens. I think I'm glad we're getting back to the European theater. That's where I want to be. And this is going to really, for me, the season starts now.
That's what Lewis Hamilton is saying.
Exactly. That's what Fernando is saying, too. So,
yeah.
Boss, get back into the points after the previous Grand Prix, having scored nothing. And, you know, I must say that Gutierrez really needs to pick up the pace. I think Romain Grosjean is blowing him out of the water.
Oh, yeah, and I don't think that's going to change. You know, it's interesting both with him and Felipe. You know how hard and tough it is. You know, it's very hard to win a U.S. Formula Championship here or Indy Lights, but you can imagine how tough it is to win in Europe, in European series like a Formula Renault Euro Cup or a GP3 with talents from all over the world. And in this environment, both Sebastian Vettel, both Esteban Gutierrez and Felipe, in their first 3 years in Europe, they won two championships. And as has happened, I'm not saying they are bad drivers, but you know, as so often happens, by the time they get to Formula One, they meet their match and then some. And you know, Esteban Gutierrez was Nico Hülkenberg in Formula One, if you recall, with Sauber, and he really did not knock on his door. You know what I'm saying, or disturb him. And it's the same thing is happening with Nico Hülkenberg. So maybe his potential was to get him to Formula One, and then, you know, you just cannot run against the Nico Rosbergs or the Hamiltons or the Alonsos of the world. It's a different caliber.
I know. And Esteban, having some damage on the first lap on his car, didn't help him much at all, of course. But Romain, and I'm not surprised that Haas wants to run him in NASCAR because he put him in. And we'll see what happens there. I don't think it's a great idea. Let's focus on Formula One for now. But an outstanding job by Romain Grosjean, and certainly Sergio Perez finishing in ninth, way ahead of Nico Hülkenberg, who retired on the first lap once again. He did the same thing last year. I don't know what's going to happen to these drivers, but then, on the other hand, we don't know what's going to happen to Sahara Force India. It's certainly not as dire as it is at Sauber.
Is missing one of the engine tests, and that should tell you how much money situation is a big deal there. Force India, my understanding is an arrest warrant has been issued in India for Dr. Vijay Mallya, who of course is now hanging out at his palatial state in somewhere in England. And they keep saying, you know, the racing team is different from his current ongoing situation, but it has to affect one way or the other, you know, if you don't know what's going to happen with your team owner.
I agree. So, yeah, very, very tough, very, very tough. But in the end, Lewis Hamilton certainly gave it a good shot trying to catch up to Nico Rosberg, but it just didn't have enough laps, and I think in the end he realized he better get the car home. He had zero water pressure, blah, blah, blah. But all in all, I was happy to see Kimi Raikkonen on the podium. I was happy to see Valtteri Bottas and Felipe Massa finish ahead of the Red Bulls, even though they seem to be stuck in that slot. They just can't make the jump to Ferrari always being a nudge ahead of the Williams. So, and of course, Fernando Alonso in the points with sixth place was bravissimo, bravo, 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 bravo. So, yeah, I'm a happy guy. And even Jenson Button finished 10th with some points. So, McLaren hauling in the dollars. They're so happy and peppy and bursting along. Ricciardo in 11th, not good.
And talking of Kimi Raikkonen, you know, that poor guy is looking more and more like AAR's official driver and on the podium behind two Sorreros. Now, this is the guy who Montoya could not rattle his cage when they were teammates in silver-winning machines called McLaren. So Kimi Raikkonen's career, which I really, really enjoyed from his first season with Sauber to his McLaren days, and he is quite a different driver now. Maybe the age has caught up to him, or he's lost interest or motivation. Maybe he should have a lunch or dinner with Jean Alesi.
That's true, but I think you're right. I mean, he's still a fast driver, but he's not the driver that he was when he was at McLaren in the old days, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, remember that victory at Suzuka over Fisico when he started from like the last or the second last row?
No.
I mean, that was the Kimi that I loved as a racer. Yeah.
No, for me, it's important time to retire and go ice fishing in Finland.
You know, talking of fishing and all that, it's interesting how quickly rumors are now around what will happen at Ferrari, what will happen at, and there's even talk of JB going back to Williams. And of course, he always competitive machinery, not being Formula One, but after driving this McLaren Honda this season and past year, I think the Williams drive may look like a dream drive for him right now.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to sit and listen and watch 2016 season. I don't know what's going to happen next year, but with Kvyat being sent down to the Toro Rosso team, Max Verstappen going to Red Bull, this is going to be very interesting, especially since they know that Renault is going to come up with a...
Now, how do you think Max Verstappen will do against Daniel
Ricciardo?
Well,
that's the key. That's what I was trying to mention, is Daniel Ricciardo, if they actually finish in the points together, stay out of trouble, and you know, don't he can be an anti-Kvyat, then everything is fine.
You know something? If he can do to Daniel Ricciardo, relative to the performance of the car or the package, if he can do to Daniel Ricciardo what Ricciardo did to Sebastian Vettel, then I have to believe, Dr. Marco, that the only driver Max Verstappen can be compared to is Ayrton Senna.
And I think that's getting out of control.
Clark, in terms of performance, I mean, if this kid can win a race or even a championship at the age of 20, man, that will be so good for the sport. I mean, I would love to see that.
I know, but that's not going to happen, Nasser. I'm telling you. I think Ricciardo is going to make him feel, now I have a teammate that's more machismo than moi.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you have to take this kid seriously. You just don't go from karting to Formula 3 and win 6 races in a row. It's just, you know, guys in second and third year, good drivers, have a hard time winning 3 races. I mean, we mentioned earlier, Kvyat won 3 races in GP3 to become a champion. And I'm kind of surprised that that's not what Red Bull is looking for, that they even put him in Formula 1. But, every dog has its day, and sometimes some dogs chew a little bit more on the bone. Some prefer the Nabisco biscuits. But to each his own.
Absolutely.
We'll see
so
how
congratulations
it works out.
To Nico Rosberg. We'll see what happens, but anyway, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services, transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car, bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call, 850-421-8461, and tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair, right on the corner, right on the price, 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here. You globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
And, Clark, this Daniel Kvyat meltdown is a big reportage in the world of motor racing. So we have a little sports mantra and a look back on his career called Kvyat Kickdown. May I proceed with your express digital content? Thank you, sir. Dr. Marco launched his own Operation Barbarossa against his Russian tank driver, going from podium hero in China 2 weeks ago to be the big bad Siberian wolf. Kvyat ran into the back of ex-Red Bull star, sealed his fate, and he was asked to come see Austrian Papa in Milton Keynes, which is home not only to Austrian-owned F1 team, but is also the operating base of European operation. Mighty fine town and chutney available. So that's just the travelogue idea there. Kvyat has been supported by Red Bull from early in his career. He raced against fellow Red Bull Matador in Formula BMW in 2010, Carlito would finish the season fourth and Kvyat was 10th, really wants to see. It is interesting to know that Red Bull gave him four full seasons in junior Formula before bringing him into Formula One. And it was only in 2013 that Kvyat was able to win a European Championship, the GP3, finishing. Look at the competition he had to win this championship. Finishing ahead of second place Facundo Regalia of Argentina and Connor Daly from Indiana. Kvyat is lucky he has been kicked down and not kicked out. The boulevard of broken dreams running from Red Bull's Fussel am See corporate headquarters in Austria is a long and winding road that has by now traveled to all continents where humans reside and race. Would you have any final words on this situation with Kvyat?
Yes, I think Kvyat's lucky to have a job. And I don't know, this could be a big psychological blow to him. We'll see how he handles going backwards instead of forward to Toro Rosso. It's going to be interesting, but I think his days are done.
You know, I just don't want to see him on the, you know, the Wednesday conference, because, you know, the normal question asked in so many ways would be, how does it feel? Do you take it as a demotion? Do you this? Do you that? I just want him, don't want him to go through that disappointment and insults, you know. But I think, you know, his big problem now is not Dr. Marco, but Carlos Sainz. Carlos Sainz, you know, has really taken off Max Verstappen, but he has done a slowly and quietly done a tremendous job. So it will be interesting to see if Kvyat is blown away by Carlito, then he will be on the Scott Speed and with Antonio Liuzzi program.
We miss Vitantonio Liuzzi.
Yeah.
Well, no, I agree.
Oh.
It is what it is. You're at the top of the pinnacle. You can't be doing what he was doing, and it's done. I'm now going to show if he really is the new Ayrton Senna.
Yeah, and it's actually a word. He needs to have big testicular fortitude.
We'll see what happens, because I know right now I'm looking forward to Fernando in España and the McLaren with the new package. It's going to be exciting. And, of course, Haas is bringing a new rear wing. They're pumped up, and they're running the latest spec Ferrari motor. So let's see how long it is, because things are changing fast.
Yeah, and you know what is interesting? Red Bull always have a lot of drivers in the mixer, you know, bringing to Formula One. They have this guy, Norman Nato. Yes, he's your homeboy, Francais. And he is really not doing what he was supposed to do. And I think he's in GP2 this year, but we wish him well. And they have a couple of other drivers, and I was looking at their, you know, how they're doing. They are really not doing what Dr. Marco wants. And you got to win. Otherwise, have you ever seen the video of Helga Suari having a heated argument with Dr.
No.
Marco? Oh, it's on YouTube. And Rob, just to say, okay, sir, okay, he's arguing with him. And then Marco ends the conversation by saying, we don't accept this. It's not acceptable, and walks away. And, yeah, you don't want to piss off Dr. Marco,
yeah,
that's for sure.
Very foolish.
And I think I heard it correct that this is the third longest fun track on the schedule. Judging by the, you know, the aerial photographs and panning shots they were showing, it looks like a pretty happening place there.
It is. Putin is a happy guy. He's a party animal.
Yeah. And the pole position was number 24 for Nico, same as Niki Lauda, and 10th on the all-time list. It's amazing. It's amazing, 10th on the all-time list for a guy who has never been a world champion. But, you know, they do a lot of races this year, these days, so you cannot compare what Ronnie Peterson did or what, you know, somebody else did 30 years ago. Very interesting, this 700 podium for Ferrari. That is very, very impressive. And, of course, this has been said now 20,000 times, 7 wins in a row for Nico, total number of wins, 8. And that was something very interesting mentioned, that since Mexico, I've not verified this, but I think it's true, that since Mexico, he has won 7 races in a row, and that is more wins than Papito, and included the 1982 World Championship with only 1 victory in the Swiss Grand Prix of all the places at Dijon. And that's not a typo. You remember that race probably. Yes, sir. And hey, Clark, you know, talking of Prenois, I won't be able to make it to Dijon Prenois if all the stars and bars align. I would be at the June 12th Silverstone British Formula 3 race. And the next weekend, I made some changes to my plan. Next weekend is the Le Mans 24-hour race. And my friend, Mr. Olivier Amenu, who used to work for Nicolas Todd, he is at that race. So I'm going to go to Le Mans. And I'm hoping to interview, if I can just interview one guy, Fisico.
Bravo.
I will be very happy. So now Mercedes have gone 10 wins in a row, one short of a current record from McLaren. Very interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, the Russians are coming. Sergei Sirotkin, now part of the Renault driver development program, and I don't know how much of this is based on commercial consideration. He drove Kevin Magnussen's car on Friday, and expect more of this as the season gets into the European leg. Sergei is a red hot, no pun intended, favorite for this year's GP2 championship, and it will be interesting to see how it works out. You know, it's amazing. I was talking to somebody involved in Formula One, and I asked a question, because some of these, you know, driver development programs, they're taking on people, and you're wondering, is it's like Jean Alesi's son is in the Ferrari Driver Academy, and, you know, he is not as quick, half as quick as his papa. So some of these driver signings, even in Formula One, it's pretty obvious that they are bringing some buco bucks, as you would say, to get the seat. And I think Caterham had Alexander Rossi as a reserve driver. They have Davide Valsecchi as a reserve driver. So I have some question on some of these deals. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, cream rises to the top, whether you make you bring $1 billion or nothing. I mean, Lewis Hamilton for sure, and Michael Schumacher and Nando and Sebastian Vettel, they brought nothing but bags and bags of pure racing talent. What say you, senor?
I agree. You will make it. If you're not, sometimes you can be talented and not get in the right package, and that happens. But I was happy for Paul DiResta winning in DTM last weekend.
Yeah, this past weekend, of course, now the DTM is doing two races. Eduardo Mortara was the winner on Saturday, and Paul DiResta.
He is Dario Nasser.
Yeah, and in MotoGP, Jorge Lorenzo led a Yamaha 1-2 in the French Grand Prix at Le Mans, and Rossi was second. So, Le Mans, man, I look forward to being there.
Very exciting.
Now, I understand you have 5,000 words on the Russian Grand Prix, but you're only going to do 50.
Yeah, we got to edit this stuff. So there you have it. Anyway, let's get to 50 words from the F1 Weekly Forum. K.H. Sin says, Rosberg was happy. Hamilton was happy. Raikkonen was happy, we think. Alonso was very happy. Williams was happy. Everybody was happy except Vettel. He wasn't a bit happy. Meanwhile, we got nice shots of Vladimir Vladimirovich sitting beside that other little megalomaniac, Bernard Bernardovich. Yay says, I love Vettel. Most English people I know cannot swear that eloquently and fluently in English like that. I love Nico. He is getting under Hammy's skin without really doing anything. I love the Russian post-race room awkwardness. They should all be that awkward with some power-crazed despot making small talk via an interpreter. Leon Bray. Looks like Putin has a new recruit for his tank regiment. Supposed to be the best drivers in the world, nearly half the field was involved in some corner. While the station and giving LCH a reprimand for ignoring them, Nico was fastest on the track, and Seb set a new record for the number of F-bombs in a single sentence. It was good to see the Politburo in the VIP stand immaculately dressed in their Putin suits, surrounding Bernie, who looked like he was dressed by the Salvation Army. Overall, not a bad one, with the McLarens finishing in the points and in front of the Red Bulls. Miguel says, effin' great race with some effin' exciting moments, particularly opening effin' lap. Kvyat makes two effin' mistakes in two effin' seconds. It felt like effin' Maldonado was back on track. In the end, everybody got something for himself in the opening lap. Neon Zapper. Sochi has become the boring track with exciting action. F1 will have to double ground crews for the remainder of the season, as fans are always guaranteed souvenirs of shredded tires and carbon fiber. Kvyat is the new Maldonado. And Jackson says, I can't imagine Kvyat is going to feel confident heading to Spain. So there you have it. Yes, the awkwardness in that with a knife. I mean, I felt sorry for Putin. I thought he was a much more talkative guy.
Yeah.
Putin was more talkative.
Yeah, well, I know he does speak some English, and but it's good to have a motor race in different major markets of the world. And now we go to Viva España. Look forward to it. Any predictions for Spanish Grand Prix, sir?
Fernando is going to win, and Jenson Button will be second.
My goodness. Ron Dennis loves
you. You know, he's not the kind of guy you want to hug.
Yeah, you never know.
So, no, I'm looking forward to España. It's going to be exciting. We need excitement. You know, great race. It's going to be good to get back to Europe. And, of course, the crown jewel, Monaco, afterwards. Uh-huh. I apologize for any problems with the audio, because I think Putin started cutting our internet service. I want to thank you for listening. Good night.
Okay, folks, I'm here with Peter Windsor, one of the great F1 journalists, a gentleman whose work I've enjoyed for many, many years. Peter, great to have you. Welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
I'm very well, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on board.
I must say, I have enjoyed your work for a long time. Before we get to Q&A, please give your thoughts on the great season we are having this year.
Well, yeah, we are having a great season. I think most seasons are great. I love Formula One, and actually I find it quite difficult in my mind to say this season is better than that season. And I think it depends, of course, on it's an individual thing, what you enjoy about our sport, and you know, maybe how many overtaking maneuvers there are, how many different winners there are. In my case, enjoyment is really seeing good drivers in good cars doing what they do well, and that's what I love. And it's been interesting watching Lewis Hamilton dealing with a car that he hasn't been particularly comfortable with, and watching how he's adapted and grown. Likewise with Nico, and I love watching Kimi drive as well, so that's been a lot of fun.
Do you love his radio communication?
I don't listen to it that much, to be honest. I usually have the volume turned down. I listen to the... I'm a bit isolated in what I do, but I tend to love watching the onboard just with the engine note, and focusing on that and listening to the throttle, the way they're using the throttle and when they're coming out of the power. You don't get any of the graphics, you don't get any of the shouting and screaming, and you get a real feel for what it's like being on board the car. So we're lucky to be in a position to see that and to choose with whom we can be on board during the race, and that's how I watch most of the Grand Prix.
Okay, great. Your motor racing life started at the age of 13 as a flag marshal in Australia. Please tell us, what was the spark for your interest in racing and about those early days?
Well, I grew up in Australia, as you rightly say. My dad was, bless him, wonderful father. I couldn't have had a better dad. And he, although we lived in Australia, we played several trips back to England every 4 years, in fact, as a family. And I remember in 1962, when I was 10, my family, I have to say, were absolutely mad, still are, on horse racing, by which I mean steeplechasing in England, jumps on grass, a very specific type of horse racing. And we were going to some of that in England on Easter Monday. And I remember we were in my cousin's little Morris Minor, and he had a little transistor radio in a leather case and an aerial on the roof. Nothing was very... We couldn't hear. It was crackly. And it was the day Stirling Moss had his accident at Goodwood. And I remember, in between the horse racing commentary, they kept jumping, I think, to Robin Richards on the radio, saying there's just been a big accident at Goodwood. The great British driver Stirling Moss has been seriously injured. We'll give you more information when we have it. Meanwhile, Graham Hill is the leader of the race. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, that's really interesting. What a terrible thing this poor man's had this accident. But what a feeling of excitement there was there. And I obviously did some research at that point and persuaded one of my godmothers to buy me a Scale Extric set. And I started looking at all the diagrams and which car I could be on and choose. And then not long after that, Jim Clark published his autobiography, 64 indeed, and that really captured me. I read that from cover to cover. It's the first book I ever read, ever bought, and I can still memorize most of the prose in that book. And Jim Clark became my new focus in life, really, at the age of, 12.
Very interesting you mentioned Robin Richards. My interest in motor racing, what really made the difference in 1973, BBC had a program called, I think, Sports Call on Saturdays, BBC World Service, and I'll never forget at 7 o'clock when it would start, the guy said, we'll go to Le Mans for the start of the race with Robin Richards, and I still remember him saying, Matra, Ferrari, Matra. Very interesting. Okay, Tasman was a great series. Did you ever meet Timmy Mayer, brother of Teddy Mayer?
Sadly not. 1964, the year he raced at Warwick Farm, my circuit, and I only went to this Warwick Farm until I was a bit old enough to travel. Tim was Bruce's teammate, obviously. That was the first appearance of Bruce McLaren Motor Racing Limited. I saw him drive, that's all I can say, and I saw him from about as far away as I am from you now. But I was too young to be able to say, hello, I'm Peter Windsor, I'm pleased to meet you. But I was in awe of Tim. I knew what he'd done in America. I knew what he'd done in Formula Junior, even in Mini Coopers in England for a little bit. And Tyler Alexander came over with him. I remember seeing Tyler there. And obviously, I was a big Bruce McLaren fan, as well as, I've just said I was a Clark fan, but if I had to nominate my second driver, it would have been Bruce McLaren. And I loved the way his helmet was, the way he smiled, the way he looked in the car. I loved the Coopers at that point. And yeah, it all captured my imagination. And I was absolutely heartbroken when I heard the news. I can still remember the exact phraseology they used. It was a Saturday afternoon. I was in my house in Australia. And there was no television of the Tasman races at all away from Sydney. And I knew they were in Longford, Tasmania. And I remember getting the news report of... it was after. They'd said who was qualified first, etc. And they said, and practice was marred by an accident involving the young American driver, Tim Mayer, whose car became airborne on the approach to the Longford pub, hit the trees, and Tim later succumbed to his injuries. Is the phrase they used. And I remember saying, asking my dad, what does that mean, succumb to his injuries? And then I was completely heartbroken. And I think that was probably one of the first times I'd kind of come face to face with the mortality of drivers and what motor racing really meant to many of them.
That's what Sever's accident did that to me in 73. Okay, my favorite story from your days in Australia is talking about Jim Clark mowing the lawn of the Gagan family. Let's hear what led to this, please.
Well, that was a story that I heard through Leo Gagan, who was a wonderful, still is a wonderful guy. He was a great driver, very consistent. And the Gagan family were an institution in Australian motorsport from the very early 60s, and they were the Lotus dealers for New South Wales. So they had all the latest Lotus stuff, and their basic colours were black, and they were just immaculate. And Jim was very close to Leo and his brother Ian, who raced, and Tom, the father, who was running the whole show for a while before he passed away. And the Lotus in 66, the Lotus 39 Tasman car was, and 65, was garaged at the Gagans up the road from Warwick Farm at Liverpool. All very convenient. The circuit and the Gagan headquarters are very near one another. And one day Jim turned up at the house to meet Leo, and they were going to have a barbecue or whatever, and Leo was late, not there, and his mum was there, and she was expecting a gardener to mow the lawns. And when Jim turned up, she said, and this is Leo telling me this, she said, oh, I'm glad you're here, you're a bit late, anyway, the mower's over there. So Jimmy, A, thinking it was quite funny, and B, probably because he quite enjoyed mowing lawns, I know quite a lot of people that do, got on with it and started mowing the lawn, and Leo arrived to find Jimmy Clark mowing his lawn.
Fantastic story. Yeah. It was around this time you met Peter Collins, and later you hooked up with him in England. What was your first job, and what was the goal when you came back to the UK?
Well, I met Peter because in my school holidays, I got a job with the local club that ran the motor racing at Warwick Farm. And that was not ordinary motor racing, nor was it an ordinary circuit. We're talking one of the best racing circuits in the world, Warwick Farm. It no longer exists. And the AARC, Australian Automobile Racing Club, one of the best run organisational clubs ever in the history of motorsport, I would say, without any doubt at all. Jeff Sykes was the man behind it. He started life at the BARC and was sent out to Australia to design Warwick Farm and then create the organisational structure. So I worked for Jeff and his very small team of people in my school holidays, stamping letters, sealing envelopes, cleaning cars, getting the lunch for them, just to be a part of the motor racing world. I didn't get paid, obviously, but I got a lunch every day, and I got up every morning at, you know, 6 o'clock. I was always there at the office. I loved it, cleaning the windows, just to be a part of the motor racing world. And I met Peter Collins there because, and that was another reason to be there, because at the AARC offices had a subscription to Motoring News and Autosport, and it was my first chance to read motor racing news as it happened within sort of 2 or 3 weeks of it happening. So that was a wonderful thing, and Peter used to come in and read the magazines as well, and we started chatting. So we got to know one another very well, and he was a couple of years older than I, and he was karting quite early on, so I started getting into that with Peter. And but later on, I went to England and started writing as a journalist. And in answer to your question, there was a moment when Andrew Ferguson said to me, I can remember it was at Thruxton, that Lotus were looking for an assistant team manager because he, Andrew, was no longer going to fly. He just had a complete phobia about flying, and they needed a guy who was capable of being Andrew's assistant but going to races. And I remember thinking at the time, oh, I'd love to do that myself, and then thinking, oh, no, I wouldn't be good enough to do that, but Peter would be great for that. And so Peter was just getting married in Sydney, and I sent him a telegram, not an email, telegram in the days of telegrams, and I said, congratulations to you, I hope everything's gone well. By the way, I think I can get you an interview at Lotus for a job as assistant team manager, but you need to get over here within a week. And he did, and he came over, and I'm sure Jane, his wife, didn't appreciate it, but Peter then stayed with me for 3 or 4 months while all those negotiations went on. He got a part-time job at Ralls, and then he got in as the assistant team manager. And because I had Peter in there, when I met Nigel Mansell for the first time and started to really believe in Nigel, I used my connection with Peter to get Nigel a test with Peter's help in the F1 car, and then get him the contract with Lotus, and then everything went from there. So one thing led to another, and if I hadn't got Peter in at Lotus, I doubt I would have been able to help Nigel get in at Lotus, and Nigel probably would never have gone into Formula 1.
Now, Nigel is in the next question. How important was the support of Pace Petroleum in getting Arnage to the big league? And I guess you were the main man behind the sponsorship?
Well, yeah, I mean, when I met Nigel, I was riding for Autocar, and actually I met him through a wonderful guy who was Trevor Taylor's manager. And he and I became friends because I wanted to meet Trevor, who was Jim Clark's teammate, and find out lots of Jim Clark stories from Trevor. And indeed, I was a huge Trevor Taylor fan as well. So he rang me one day and said, I've just met an English driver who's as good as anybody I've seen since Jimmy. You've got to see him drive. And so I did. I went over, and Nigel was in Formula Ford at that point. And yeah, he was really good. But then I went up to Birmingham to meet him, where he mortgaged his house. He was just on the point of mortgaging his house to finance 5 races in a March Formula 3 car. And I went to see him first time out in the March, out the back at Thruxton. And I remember at that moment, I'd already been on the road quite a long time with Carlos Reutemann, so I started to get a pretty good feel, something I think I'd always had anyway, for being able to watch the way drivers do work in cars and how they use their hands and their feet. And Nigel, to my eye, was absolutely right there. He was another Carlos Reutemann, the way he drove. Very fingertippy, very good at getting the car early into the corner, never loaded up the front too much, very good at coming out of the brake pedal pressure at the right rate to get the front to work, and just very, very economical in the way he was driving. And I became a believer in Nigel. And on top of that, you know, the fact that he had lots of other things. He was a crack clay pigeon shot like Jackie Stewart. He was a single-figure handicap golfer. He was very good at judo at that point, and karate, and lots of things going for him. And so, I started writing letters, and I used to get to my office 2 hours earlier than I needed to, and I'd spend those 2 hours from 6 until 8 at Autocar composing and writing letters to potential sponsors for Nigel. I bought the Times 1000 book of companies and just went through them one by one, wrote to them all, usually to the CEO. I was reading lots of books on how to raise sponsorship at that point, and And I used to then follow up, and I remember ringing Victor Gauntlet one day of Pace, and I just rang him and I said, because I'd read somewhere that you should ring very early in the morning, you might get the CEO at his desk early in the morning before the secretary comes in, and there was some article I'd read in the New York Times, I think, and Victor Gauntlet picked up the phone and I said, oh, I'm Peter Windsor, I wrote to you. He said, oh yes, I remember, you're the chap that wants me to take and make a bet on a young driver, a bit like betting on a horse. I said, well, it's not really that, it's just that if he doesn't make Formula One, you won't get your money back. But if he does, and there's a conflict of sponsors between your company and the F1 team, you will get your money back. And he said, oh, this sounds interesting. Come and have lunch. So I had lunch. And yeah, we did. We found the money that was to keep him racing in Formula 3 in 1980, whereas his first five races were in 78. So yeah, I think it helped a lot. He was doing Formula 3 while he was... I'd also helped him get the Ralph F2 Honda test drive with Ron Toranac. He did a couple of races. And at that point, we'd got him in, Peter and I had got him in at Lotus as a test driver there as well, or test contract, and he did a bit of testing as well. So yeah, it was a good thing.